Welcome to Growth Uncut, a podcast that interviews different people from around the world to share their views on personal growth. We feel passionately about connecting communities and raising awareness around social justice, humanity, and relationships.
And today we are doing a special podcast which looks at our recent report that was written for the Howard Digby Penal Reform. It was looking at gambling culture in prison, a completely new avenue of research for us at Penal Reform Solutions, but something that we all feel really passionate about having done the research. And today we are joined with a collection of wonderful people that are going to talk a little bit about the report, a little bit about the findings from the report, and I guess our reflections on the process and more broader issues that are associated with gambling and gambling culture in prison. So I'm going to hand over to Steve to introduce himself and then Justine. So Steve, over to you.
I'm Stephen Iandu. I work as a safer gambling advisor for Bet No More UK. I'm somebody of lived experience. Gambling played a role in my life for over 10 years until I found my recovery in 2015 with Bet No More UK. And I've made it my mission to actually address and try to deal and help with the issues surrounding gambling harms.
Thank you so much, Stephen. And Justine?
Hi, I'm Justine Best, and I'm a research consultant at Penal Reform Solutions. And my role within this particular research was collecting the data and supporting our peer researchers and putting together our report.
Fantastic. And my name is Dr. Sarah Lewis. I am the Director of Penal Reform Solutions and the organisation Grow, Transform, Belong, which is a community interest company. I mean, the main reason I wanted to do this piece of research was not only it was an area I didn't know much about, but also involving peer researchers is something we feel really passionate about. I think people with lived experience bring a richness to any research project, and this allowed us the freedom to really engage in a really genuine way with people in prison to help us really understand what's going on in gambling culture. So they aren't with us today, but I'm sure they're with us in spirit in terms of their kind of contribution. So the report, I mean, ultimately the report was there to understand gambling. So what was gambling, how was gambling experienced in prison? How aware were staff and people in prison regarding gambling? What role it played, I guess, within the culture in prison more broadly? The impact it had, and also something about, I guess, the impact it had with respect to rehabilitation. So to what kind of role does gambling play when we think about people growing and being released from prison and becoming kind of crime free and that kind of journey? So Steen, do you want to just talk a little bit about what we did?
So our research team consisted of four peer researchers who live in prison, two researchers from Penal Reform Solutions, and a researcher from Bet No More. In total, there was 141 participants. This included 90 people living in prison, 24 members of staff, 17 friends or family with those of someone in prison, and 10 people were interviewed that had lived experience. We collected the data using assisted questionnaires, interviews, and in-depth interviews, and then the data was analysed using thematic analysis.
Fantastic. And it was a really lovely process in terms of getting the peer researchers, so recruiting them. So they're already part of our growth project within the research site, so they're focusing on cultural change anyway. So they had really good knowledge of culture, already good knowledge of how to deliver research in an ethical way. And Bet No More, Liz Riley came in and she did some fantastic training with the peer researchers around gambling and gambling harms. So we had a really great team. The other thing is we had the families team. So the families team is a team of civilian staff inside of the prison, the research site, and they helped us distribute the questionnaires to friends and families of those that were living in the prison. So thank you, hats off to them. They were fantastic, and without them, we wouldn't have got the views and the voice of families. So the report had three key themes within it. The first one was really understanding and appreciating the awareness and experience of gambling in prison. Second one was what role it played within the culture. And then finally, what impact it made on the culture and individuals. So in terms of the experience and awareness people had in terms of gambling within prison, firstly, it was really creative in the sense that people would gamble with about lots of different things, whether that was football, whether that was sports, both outside in the community, nationally or inside the prison, as well as, I guess, the mundane kind of activities within prison, counting when, for example, how many rats one might find in one's day. The other kind of, I guess, interesting fact around prisons was the level of currency. So currency was very much value based. So you could have basically a pound's worth of currency. So that could include money, but it could also include food, invariably food and toiletries. So again, because there was a lack of access to money, different things were used, whether that was property or even time, cleaning someone else's cell, doing some kind of service to other people. But ultimately, gambling was seen as quite a normal thing in prison. It was culturally embedded, it was ingrained. And depending on where you were kind of situated within the prison culture more generally, I guess dictated what your experience of gambling was. So right at the bottom, there was a significant amount of people that carried out kind of small, and how they called it, safe gambling. This was small bets with friends, people they know, they kind of agreed the rules. It was essentially quite contained, and the majority of people carried out kind of this small and safe gambling experience. People then started seeing bigger loots, they started seeing kind of bigger wins, and then they kind of got tempted by how they could win more money, I guess, around gambling. And this was particularly difficult when people didn't have an awful lot of food within prison, and they didn't earn an awful lot of money. So again, getting a big win meant that you had a better quality of life, I guess, within that prison. And then there was this space which was really risky. Rules kind of went out the window a little bit. Rules were made up as they went along. People had to kind of give money back. So this kind of idea of double bubble, which is when you kind of have to lend, when you lend money, you have to give twice the amount back. So it became kind of really risky business, I guess, in terms of that experience. And then you had the people very at the top who were seen as immune, the kind of untouchables, where they were the kind of puppet masters that kind of organized this kind of underworld, this kind of economy that was going on in terms of cash transfers, in terms of services that were provided, and how people were protected or not protected depending on where they were within these subcultures. Stephen, Justine, any observations from these findings? Does it resonate, I guess, to the community, Stephen? You know, what are your thoughts?
Well, a few observations, really, and based on, you know, my experience of working in prisons myself, of course, in a different capacity. So I was working in rehabilitation, but I had a lead role in helping offenders who were experiencing issues around finance and debt and gambling. And the finance and debt issues were actually in result of their gambling, which was interesting, really. So what I picked up throughout the report was the prison culture. That's something which actually, you know, came to my attention in terms of basically the regulations that there were around it. By the sounds of things, it seems as if basically the system was in place, a system which was regulated by a hierarchy of individuals in the prisons. But something which was surprising for me was, you know, how little I actually knew about prison culture when it came to how things were responded to, especially when it came to gambling. I was embedded in prisons for, well, quite a few years. And things which I learned and things which I discovered, I thought I had it all covered. But however, just having that one day of experience and actually, you know, being given a presentation by the three individuals who we had the pleasure to meet, who are based at the establishment we went to, was a massive eye-opener for me. And what that taught me is that a lot, you know, needs to be done. There's still a lot that needs to be discovered, and we can actually approach the issue of tackling gambling harms, especially when it comes to basically prison culture, in a different way, really. Yeah, that's what I have to say on it so far. What do you think, Justine?
I think the main thing that I took away was the harms. So kind of I see gambling within prison as kind of that whole betting, kind of the same as quite a few people we spoke to, kind of that small, safe football game, speaking to people and the experiences they've had and the things that they've seen, even if not necessarily them being the person who's impacted, that secondary impact of seeing that happen to other people, and the darkness of that kind of space for those that get caught in the immune part of gambling. and that took me back quite a bit in that, just to kind of see the subcultures and how embedded that is, and quiet unless you're in there.
I think for me as well, it just resonates so much with what we know about culture within drug use as well. You know, we've got people that are struggling in terms of using drugs. We've got people that are dealing drugs in that risky space where they have to kind of carry out different acts of service in order to pay off debts mainly, and survive in this environment. And then you have these kind of drug barons, drug lords at the top that are immune, and they're the ones that normally get kind of ghosted out of prison, so removed from prison and disrupted in order for us to manage drugs. And I think what was really interesting from the findings was that people thought that debt was, or assumed debt was, just around drug use rather than thinking that it could be associated with gambling. And sometimes we just make that assumption without asking the questions whether gambling it does actually play a role. So that was something that I certainly took away from the findings that we came up with here in terms of the experience and awareness. The second part of the report you'll see talks about the role gambling plays. So again, for me, there's something about the pains of imprisonment and everything kind of gets withdrawn from you. So you don't have all of these, you know, you don't have meaning, you don't have connecting with people in terms of relationships, your liberty gets taken away, but people still got to survive in that environment. I think what's really interesting is that how gambling is used as a tool to aid survival was something that certainly came through in the findings. So this, firstly, this need to feel, to be stimulated, to see, to sense some kind of thrill around gambling, to experience joy and anticipation and excitement, that was something that certainly came about. The other thing was about some kind of movement, so running away, feeling free, remembering what it was like, you know, in the community, so kind of reliving something that they were missing in some kind of way within prison. So tasting freedom for that moment that they were kind of captivated in that game or captivated in that kind of gambling world was something that they gained a sense of peace from, almost, which when you look at the impact is, I guess, contradictory. There was also this need to survive also. What we know is that portion sizes have gone down generally in terms of food, just because of the cost of living has gone up and prisons haven't been given any more money. We know that a lot of people are unemployed in prison, so they don't go to work or education. They're locked behind their door a lot of the time. So in some senses, gambling was a way in which you could build relationships. You feel a sense of belonging, feel a sense of control. But it was a way in which you could start to activate and initiate new relationships because those systems weren't in place. So people talked about the positive aspects gambling had in terms of building communities, in terms of reconnecting with people that maybe they knew on the outside, and how they could kind of carry out these kind of pastimes together. But there was also this kind of sense that it was a way in which there was nothing else to do, and gambling was kind of the only thing on the table, quite literally. And with that, people picked it up, some who hadn't gambled essentially in the community. The final role before I kind of opened the floor for our reflections was around status. So people gained a sense of purpose. They were the man of the day. They were validated in some kind of way because they were good at poker or they were good at blackjack or whatever. But they got this kind of accolade that made them feel some form of self-worth. And again, that just only reinforced their desires to maybe continue to gamble within prisons. Stephen, in terms of your experiences in the community, looking at the role gambling plays, does it differ? Would you say are there similarities there? What's your view?
Sarah, strangely, it doesn't differ very much. It triggered some thoughts and some memories, actually. Especially when we talk about the feel and experience, the joy of gambling. So my gambling started on a school playground. I went to a boys' school, and sometimes in a sense, it felt like a prison in a sense, because, you know, we were so restricted back then. I'm showing my age a bit now. So it was about 25 years ago when I started secondary school. But I remember not being able to speak English properly. And then when I started gambling around the age of 13, 14, it was a way to connect with my peers, of course, and it did validate friendships. And in the sense of course, you know, you're still a teenager, so your hormones are still unregulated. And, you know, you do feel, you know, a sense of kind of, you know, like you're powerful or, you know, you're a leader in a sense because your luck is in and things like that. But the parallels it actually has to, let's say, things that people experience in the community, especially if they're gambling or if they're part of a group where they have to partake in this pastime to actually continue validating their relationships. It's very, very similar, really. And I'll say there isn't really much difference apart from the fact that one community, of course, is based in let's say in a sphere where they're incarcerated, and the other communities, of course, is where basically people have more freedoms to basically exercise their wills and actually engage in their pastimes in a way where there's no restriction. But something as well to add to that is the fact that, I guess, you know, gambling inside prisons is, of course, against, you know, some form of rules. But however, in the community, it's, of course, is very much acceptable and it's legal. But that activity or that pastime can actually lead to, you know, devastating consequences, which can actually influence and tempt people to committing offences, which will allow them to end up, well, facing the criminal justice system and actually being incarcerated and actually going inside prisons with the same issue that actually presented themselves before they were actually sent to prison, and no support being in place, really. But yeah, all of those key themes and those things you listed were actually triggered some thoughts for me then.
Thank you, Stephen. That's fascinating. And I do feel that it normalizes, you know, it humanizes, I guess, people in prison a bit more as well. You just in terms of you talking and the more you restrict people and make them feel kind of more kind of powerless, then with that, these, you know, we need to kind of maybe fulfill some of these survival needs. Justine, any thoughts yourself in terms of this second part of the report?
I think the two main things that stood out for me in this particular part was that the need to feel and the survival element. So just on the survival element, I found it quite hard to hear when you've got kind of fully grown human beings saying, oh, I don't want to ask my mum for money for food, so I gamble because I'm a big man and the small portions mean I get hangry and I need to eat. And kind of when we looked into it in that particular research site to see that prison wages are approximately £2.50 a week if you're unemployed, £10.50 if you're kind of lucky enough to be in employment or education. And then comparing the cost of things in the community to in prison, and the fact that we're all in a cost of living crisis. So we can get a tin of mackerel, say, for 80p down the shop, but in prison you're paying £1.85. But if you're only getting £2.50 a week, that doesn't leave you a lot of space to kind of not be hungry. So the kind of that survival element of what we would see as a necessity for them is a lot harder to achieve. So a kind of element of desperation to a degree in that survival is in this is a means to an end. And that does lead on really to the need to feel something. When, as we know, prisons recovering from COVID regimes, things are slowly starting to open up. So meaningful and purposeful activity, even if it is in a winter prison, being able to get there and having the staffing levels to enable men and women to have access to them is quite limited. So the fact that they found this space where they can use these interactions to feel a sense of stimulation, a thrill, communication, build a friendship, kind of any form of emotional feeling, that kind of really hit home in the fact that they've kind of making the best of a bad situation, but in theory there are resources in prison to get that for them. Just unfortunately, due to the troubles at the minute, it's not accessible as it should be.
Thank you both. Really, really interesting, and I think it leads us on to our last theme really, which was around the impact of gambling. And again, didn't fully appreciate how difficult this part of the research was going to be, I guess, in terms of the findings that we got. Firstly, it very much talked about how it can change the atmosphere and the tension within a prison environment. So if you know you've got a big gambling kind of bet going on, or the wing knows what's going on, it can really impact on the level of tension someone might feel, even if they're not involved with gambling. So firstly, this idea that it's only the people that are playing the game been impacted. That was certainly not the case in terms of our findings. It also brought about a sense of community. So, you know, when people were winning, essentially, that brought a little bit of joy, that a little bit of kind of collective spirit there. So it was two directional in that sense. We then had quite a large theme within the report, you'll see, around harm and vulnerability. Financial harms was huge in terms of families having pressure placed on them to pay off debts. These were sometimes masked as drug debts, but ultimately, I always remember one kind of harrowing quote within the report, which says a resident talks about, you know, I have to have a family visit and tell my loved ones someone's coming round, someone's going to pay you a visit. So that real concern that you know, you've got this kind of powerlessness in prison, and then you clock up these debts and you don't know the cultural rules. So with that, you get into a significant amount of debt, and then you have to inform your family that they are at risk, and you're also powerless to do anything about that, unless you pay off a debt that is just getting bigger and bigger by the day, and you have no mechanism to maybe earn that money. So as a result of that, the byproduct almost was harm. You know, people talking about self-harm, people talk about suicide, mental health, anxiety, depression, all of those harms that I guess are the kind of ripple effects of some of these kind of financial harms that take place, sometimes only because people don't know the rules associated with prison. So that really increased vulnerability. Again, if you were vulnerable, so people talked about sexual acts being carried out in debt of game that went wrong, and how people were kind of preyed on in terms of if they had learning needs or autism, or if they were very wealthy and people knew they had lots of money. Again, it was this real kind of calculated underworld that was kind of that operated. So that was, again, quite a shock. I think in terms of other aspects of the themes, there was a real sense of loss, of people feeling a loss of control. So losing a game, kicking off, not being able, you know, damaging their cell because they felt that the kind of consequences of losing, a loss of connection. So this idea of blacklisting. So if you lost a game and you couldn't pay your debt, that would then increase. You continue to not be able to pay your debt. You were then blacklisted from this hidden economy. So you weren't able to get, let's say, additional food through kind of informal shops that kind of get developed within prison in people's cells. So you wouldn't be able to get some products and additional stuff to improve your kind of quality of life, I guess. You wouldn't be allowed to borrow any vapes from anyone. You wouldn't be able to procure any drugs, I guess, illicitly. You could argue that's maybe a good thing, but when you're literally have no connection, no control, a load of debt racking up, and you don't trust people to talk about that, that leads to a sense of powerlessness and real desperation, which kind of makes sense when we talk about people then self-harming and people taking their lives as a result of gambling within prison. So I guess reactions from the findings linked to impact of gambling. Stephen, again, how does it look when you look through your lens, whether that's your experience or what you know in terms of the community?
There's some similarities to my experience and what I've learned, especially when I was delivering support within prisons. Something which captured my attention was what you mentioned about individuals actually masking their gambling debts as drug debts. So it just goes to show you the power of stigma, or the stigma, the fact that, you know, they still carry that shame even when they're at a place where they've more or less lost most of their rights. So it's really interesting, especially the reluctance to disclose even when things have actually gotten that bad. So the question would be, what is it about having a drug debt which is more acceptable than having a gambling debt? So I think that requires more exploration. So we need to look at that. We've always spoke about the stigma and the shame around it, but I think it just highlights further how powerful that is. But I think around the community that's actually developed in prisons, and about how people, let's say, for example, groups actually evolve, as I mentioned early on, into basically these systems, and how they can actually control, you know, who has access to this economy, which is actually being developed. But what I want to actually highlight is what are my motivations for actually getting involved in this project. At first, a few years ago, in terms of my approach to actually trying to help people who were incarcerated were actually discriminatory. Myself as well, once upon a time, I'll say as a young Black individual, I was actually interested in basically the perceptions that basically people had of us, let's say, of a group that I represented. So I wanted to actually work inside prisons. I worked as a volunteer mentor inside different institutions, Feltham Young Offenders, and then I went on to work at Thameside ISIS and things like that. But what happened was I quickly figured out that there was a lot of kind of correlation or similarities to what these individuals who I was actually helping and mentoring and what their experiences were and what my experiences were. And the only difference was I was fortunate enough not to go down the path or the line which they actually chose to maintain the life that they created for themselves, especially if they had issues around gambling and how they ended up and how they felt as if basically society perceived them and how they were treated more or less. But as you know, as time went by, I grew and I started to develop and I started to learn and I started to, well, I already knew that it impacts all areas of anyone's life, really. And I started to kind of basically broaden my mind. And what I actually discovered was that, well, it was a bigger problem, you know, that we allow ourselves to think. And something that I quickly discovered as well, as you mentioned, in terms of basically the ripple effects that it has on people, it's limitless, really. I remember I used to support an individual who wasn't, you know, from the specific demographic which I actually was targeting when I first started, who had his partner, his wife, selling her body to pay off his gambling debts. And that was something that really hit me hard. And he didn't want to disclose this to anyone because there was nothing anybody can do about it. So in my mind, I thought to myself, well, in a sense, you know, there's someone actually on the outside world that's experiencing harms and that's actually putting themselves at risk to mitigate a situation where a very close relative or loved one has actually gotten themselves into. So I think there could be a lot, you know, things, you know, a lot of support actually could be put in place for affected others. I think sometimes if you do have someone, you know, who is in prison, you're essentially an affected other for whichever reason and things like that. And we're talking about that a lot now in gambling. When it comes to gambling, we're talking about gambling related harms and affected others. And we need to actually factor this in place as well. Is what does that mean for the individual's loved ones, close ones or relatives or anything like that? And how do we actually put provisions in place or facilities in place to kind of address this and things like that? But just a lot of taking in, really, and around emotional elements around it. I can relate to a lot of that, you know, loss of control, loss of connection. And this is something which has actually been cited to me by individuals who I'd supported who were incarcerated, and that loss of control, loss of connection was multiplied given the fact that they found themselves in an establishment where there is no support available. They don't know where to turn to, and only actually people that they can actually turn to is people who are colluding with them and actually who are individuals who are associated with the harm, so who can actually be responsible for why they find themselves in that situation. But a lot to think about. So yeah.
Thank you, Stephen. Justine, any thoughts?
For me, what I took away kind of on this last bit was not just the impacts that gambling has on an individual, but the follow-on things that happen from that. So looking at mental health and elements of rehabilitation, and that acknowledgement that a lot of the gambling or betting was because they were bored. So through all of our data, one of the key things that participants said was, oh, there's nothing to do, I'm bored. Like it's literally, you get up, you do this, you're lucky if you get an hour out, you're back in your cell, we need something to do. And one of our particular participants shared with us at kind of like 4 o'clock in the morning, they're sat watching Channel 5 because there's a roulette program that happens. And you just think there's so many things that could be done to support the support of gambling. So with your mental health, people weren't necessarily linking mental health to gambling. So when particular participants explained that there were residents that would hide in their cells or pretend to be sick and not come out through that fear and anxiety of the consequences of what's going to happen, or when they get lost down the dark hole and they feel isolated. They're on their own. The wife's already had a visit. Mum's not answering the phone anymore. I've lost my job. I'm thinking of suicide. I can't see a way out. And you're kind of identifying them behaviours and having stuff in place to support that, so that even if you're not having the conversation and not ready to say about gambling, you can identify mental health and its own entity. You can see that someone's withdrawn, you can see someone's hiding. What can we put in place to support that, that in turn may encourage them to access support for gambling or get to a place where they feel that they're able to then take on that challenge? So I think the things that led on from the impacts of direct gambling were really important, and that of rehabilitation. Simple things of just being able to get to education. As a prison system, what can we do to provide alternative options that reduce the amount of time there is to play these games, where people can rehabilitate, whether they're doing skills, learning new skills, they're in education, whatever that may be, kind of reducing that time so that when you are playing the games, it's of a social element rather than harmful.
Thank you, Justine. Really, really interesting. Okay, what we're going to do is, before we kind of talk about the kind of future and I guess what we would love to see in terms of recommendations, and before we do that, just to reflect a little bit on our gambling summit. So as part of this project, we all went to the gambling summit at the research site, where we met three of the four peer researchers, and they presented the findings of the report and presented some of their ideas and their recommendations, and also talked about their experience of delivering this report alongside us, both of us, in terms of Bet No More and Penal Reform Solutions. Any reflective points just to share, I guess, with the audience who weren't there? I think it was a really productive and rich insight into the benefits of peer researchers, and I got an awful lot from it. But just to open the floor, really, so Stephen first.
I found the day really educational, to be honest with you, to start off with. It had been some time ever since I'd been, you know, in prisons or in an establishment, prison establishment. I found the presentation absolutely amazing. I was so taken by how well the peer researchers actually handled or managed the whole research project. Something which I was actually impressed by was how they actually overcame all of the restrictions which were put in place and the challenges which they actually faced. I remember, I think all of them mentioned the fact that they were challenged in a very strong way by, you know, certain individuals, you know, whether it be fellow inmates or be guards, you know, who were actually quite suspicious about basically their objectives, you know, behind them actually, you know, engaging with them in questionnaires and actually having conversations with them around gambling and things like that. And they dealt with it so well, and they overcame those obstacles so well. And actually hearing their stories as well and their backgrounds and how they came to actually find themselves in that situation and what their personal experience with gambling was in a sense as well. And as Justine mentioned, you know, the boredom, you know, the fact that there wasn't any alternatives, you know, to actually, well, for one, to, you know, remain entertained or engaged. And they did propose some recommendations, which I hope yourself and Justine will go into, and which I very much agree with. You know, there's a few things have actually come to mind in a sense of recommendation. So hopefully when we close up, we can actually share some light on what a few of those are. But yeah, I was impressed. I found it really educational, and it opened up my mind further, and it reduced, you know, the level of ignorances, you know, which I have when it comes to, well, prison culture, and especially when it comes to gambling as well, because it was really good for me to actually be there and learn more, I should say.
Justine, any reflections from the day?
I think the peer researchers definitely added a educational element that supported also the engagement of the staff that were in the room. I was really impressed with how engaging the staff was, including the senior leadership team, and that openness to understanding and listening, and themselves coming back with feedback and listening to certain recommendations that the peer researchers obviously thought, actually, we could implement that here. And that openness and willingness of kind of the senior leader team kind of going, we could do that, we could work on that, let's look at that, let's discuss it. And shining a light on the depth of gambling. And I think it's important to note that just at the Gambling Summit, there were some new officers that were there. So they were kind of new into the prison. And I think it was important for them at their initial first couple of weeks to understand from there, this is a particular culture, a hidden culture within prison that you can educate yourself on, so you can look out for the signs of how you can be supportive. So I thought that was a really useful part of the summit to educate at the beginning of their journey.
Thank you. That's really powerful to hear your reflections. And I think just it's hard to capture the atmosphere that was in that room, really, but it was just lovely to get a group of people together, irrespective of whether they were living or working in prison, that had a collective vision around what they wanted to do. And I just we do that a lot in our work, and it's something that I really value greatly. Moving on to our final part of the podcast, which is around our recommendations. So please have a look at the report in terms of more details, but we're really keen to really drive more research in this topic, to really understand culture, to see what determines where people sit within this subculture, what factors influence the way this position that they find themselves in, and how we can effectively address some of the kind of key issues that we found in the report. And that links me onto our collective action, I guess our call to action, which, you know, at PRS we are real kind of activists, this idea that getting people together, whether that's staff, families, charities, prisons, and people that are living it, including maybe some of the people that are at the top of the tree, to really come up with a kind of meaningful action, kind of work, meaningful action recommendations around how we can address this collectively as a community, not just a prison community, but a kind of societal community, to really drive a recovery culture. Invariably, we isolate, we remove people that are running these kind of underworlds, essentially. And I kind of think that isn't the long game. We don't want those individuals coming out of prison and feel that they haven't addressed some of the things that they seriously need to address, particularly around, I would say, self-worth, because I think they're looking for power in different places. But also just to really recognise people's, you know, the harms associated with gambling, and looking at gambling in the same way that maybe we look at drug use and drug kind of recovery, in terms of how we really focus on the individual, how we recognise the addictive element attached to gambling, and we really listen and provide meaningful spaces where people can talk about those things. We also talked about building trust. So of course we're going to have something in there about culture, because we are kind of culture fans. So building trust will only allow people to, I guess, overcome this huge cultural rule in prison, which is you don't snitch, you don't grasp, you don't tell on people. And that causes an awful lot of harm. So if we can build trust and relationships, continue to focus on culture rather than performance, then performance will sort itself out, in my view. So really challenging the cultural norms associated with prison more broadly, and how gambling would then be impacted by that. I think the other thing we wanted to kind of convey was that prison is not a place of safety. So when we're sentencing people, when we're looking at mitigation, if we are placing someone with problems around gambling into prison, that is not a safe environment for them. And being really clear about that, and educating and supporting, you know, conveying that point relentlessly. And I think the last thing, I guess, is more around our growth work. You know, when the reason why people grow, we believe, I guess, in prison or even outside of prison, is when they have meaning, when they have purpose, when they have good relationships, when they experience peace and joy and well-being, and when they can connect to the sense of community and have good resources to cope with things in life. If we introduce these things into prison, then people won't seek them through gambling. People won't seek a thrill. They won't seek a connection. They won't seek joy or peace or any of these things. They won't cope with gambling. They'll instead grow and adopt kind of healthier strategies where they can move forward in their life and lead a crime-free life, which is our ambition for all people that enter into prison and who live in the community. So So yeah, I'm aware of our time. We've talked forever, but let's talk to Stephen just in terms of these are kind of me and Justine put these together with the peer researchers, but really keen to hear your views, Stephen, in terms of what do you think about our recommendations? What would you add? What would you take out? What are your thoughts?
I think your recommendations are brilliant. If there's any call to action, I think that should be it. That's exactly how it should look like in terms of course, the need for individuals to actually connect in a positive way. I think that's important. If we want rehabilitation to work, we need to actually focus on rehabilitation instead of focusing on punitive measures alone. And I think this is how it can actually lead to people actually trying to basically reach out for different things to actually add meaning in their lives, even if, though it could be negative in the sense of course, gambling in prisons. One thing that I would add would be, I guess, a bit idealistic, would to have, you know, certain services who specialise in issues around gambling harms embedded in prison services. They have that, and they've had that for a long time when it comes to drugs and alcohol. So I think now we now recognise and we can now accept the fact that gambling is an issue which impacts all members of society, or can impact all members of society. And it doesn't only limit, and the harm that is not only limited to people who are not based inside the prison. And if anything, it can be worse within prisons. So I think there needs to be a focus on trying to basically create a provision in place where people who have issues around gambling or experiencing harms can actually be supported in prisons and actually have some form or level through the gate support when they're actually released from prisons to continue so that they can continue receiving support to actually ensure and maximize the chances of rehabilitation. I think we can actually do that. It's important to. I mean, there are services out there who have tons of experience now, lived experience, academics like yourselves, people who have a passion and people who are making it their mission to actually tackle this issue, to actually get together as a collective and put something in place to reduce the harms, potentially reduce offending, and actually build better, stronger communities for the benefit of all of us.
What a lovely phrase to end on. And in terms of our call to action, absolutely. I think if people are listening to this and thinking, do you know what, I want to be part of it, whether you are an affected other, whether you are you know, someone who's been in prison, someone lived experience of gambling, whether you're an academic, a charity, whatever it may be, just maybe someone who's got a bit of passion to do something around this topic of interest, then please do get in touch with us. Generally, you can get in touch with us through our websites, so www.pinreformsolutions.com or www.growtransformbelong.com, or you can get in touch with either myself or Justine with our first name, so Sarah@pinreformsolutions.com or Justine@pinreformsolutions.com. And then Stephen, how might people get in touch with you if they wish to?
Yeah, they can visit the Bet No More UK website, and it's spelt in a unique way. It's Bet, but No More would be KNOW, betnomoreuk.org. And my email, it's Stephen, spelt with a V, at betnomoreuk.org. So that's how people can get in touch with me, of course, as well. So, and of course, you know, hopefully we're now partners now, so they can get to me through you as well. I'm hoping so.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you, Justine. Thank you, Stephen, for coming on. And it's been lovely to talk to you and reflect on the findings from the report. Really hope you found it useful, folks. And really hope you have a read of the report and have a read of some of the voices that feature within it, and just a really big acknowledgement from all of us, maybe, around the peer researchers that can't be here today due to their incarceration, but have contributed significantly to this report. So hats off to you all, and thanks very much. All the best. Bye.